Hey, welcome everyone once again to Mid-Current Church. Whether you're here with us on site at Camp St. Croix or whether you're joining us online, we are just really, really, really thrilled to have you here with us on Mother's Day. I know I love watching my own wife, Erica, be a mom. We really both love being parents and raising our kids. At the very same time, it can be hard work at times. Okay, there is no instruction manual for how this whole deal works. And certainly, as much as we try, we don't get it right all of the time. And so we're grateful for friends in our same stage of life, or even two or three stages beyond us, who we can learn from as moms and as dads. And so we're always wondering, you know, how did you, or when did you, or what did you, and so on. And maybe some of you here today in that same stage of life, maybe you're wondering the same thing. Always just a little curious how families really operate at home. And if that's you, we wanted to have a little fun today, and we wanted to see if we could help you out at all by giving you a little sneak peek into the homes of some of us here at Mid-Current Church to figure out what life at home really is like. And so we figured, who better to ask about life at home than some of the very experts themselves. So take a look at this. No writing on the walls, just paper. Smart kid, right? He's going places. My own son, if you caught there, he seems to have the important stuff down. No shooting Nerf guns at people's heads. That's a pretty safe bet. I think I've got a couple favorite house rules here. And my other favorites from the video are no tooting at the dinner table and no potty jokes at the dinner table. Those seem pretty safe. Now, I cannot be certain, but if you ask me, those last two especially, those seem like rules that only a mom would come up with. No tooting at the dinner table, no potty jokes, right? Do you remember these kind of rules when you were growing up in the house? We always laugh at one of the rules that Erica's parents had for her and her older sister. There was no singing at the dinner table, okay? I don't even think they were singing inappropriate songs. Knowing them, they were probably singing like church songs. Either way, I think their parents just wanted to like eat in peace. So this was the rule, no singing at the dinner table, right? Either way, I think it's these kind of rules that we remember that maybe mom or maybe dad had for us. I think it's these kind of rules that maybe left ourselves thinking at times, man, why do you have to ruin all the fun? Thinking about that about dad, maybe thinking that about mom when she's laying the rules down in the house. Why do you have to ruin all of the fun? Okay, Mid-Current, here's a little bit of what I believe today. I believe that if we were honest with ourselves, if we were honest with other people around us here today, I think that we would admit that sometimes we ask the very same question of God. Right? Sometimes we're left thinking, man, God, why do you have to ruin all of the fun? Right? Because we see or we read or we hear about all of the rules that God has for us. And so we're left wondering, what's with all the rules? Seriously, what is with all of the rules? And that's the question that I want to try to explore for us all today in the fifth week in our series, I Have a Question. Throughout this series, we have simply been attempting to answer what we think are some of the frequently asked questions that people have about faith or about church or about God or the Bible. And one question that people so commonly ask is about all of the rules in the Bible. Why so many? Okay, why all of these do's and why all of these don'ts? What are they all about? Is God just trying to ruin all the fun? Or is God just that strict? Or is he that rigid? Or is he just that old-fashioned? Or is he just that boring or whatever? What's with all the rules? And the short answer to some of those questions, right? Is God strict? Is God boring? Is God old-fashioned? The short answer is no. Okay, God is actually none of that. In fact, he's actually quite the opposite of all of that. And that's what I want to help us to uncover just a little bit today. And by the time I'm finished, I'm hoping that you might learn something about why these rules Why these regulations? Why these boundaries for us? Why they came about? What they're really all about? And ultimately, what purpose they serve for us today? And along the way, I think we're going to learn something pretty important about God as well. And so what I want to do to begin today is I want to turn to the moment when God introduces to his people the 10 most famous of all the rules, right? What we often refer to as the 10 commandments. Truthfully, if you added up every historical law in the Old Testament, there are actually 613 of them, which probably only reinforces the question you might be asking, what is with all of these rules? Because there is a lot. But truthfully, the 10 commandments are probably the most well-known. And really, they're the 10 that more or less kind of set the foundation, that they're kind of the framework for all of the rules and for all of the regulations that were to follow. And so what I want to do is I want to turn to Exodus chapter 20. It's the second book in our Bible. Exodus chapter 20, when God delivers the Ten Commandments to the people of Israel. And right off the bat, okay, I said that I wanted you to learn something about God along the way. Right off the bat, we're going to learn something very, very, very important about God in relation to all of these rules that he has, which, just a little FYI here, all of those rules will often be referred to as the law as we continue. That's what it was referred to collectively in that day. So here's Exodus chapter 20. It says this: "Then God gave the people all of these instructions. I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery." Now, you've got to notice something here. You've got to notice this in particular, that before God actually outlines any of the Ten Commandments, starting in the very next verse that we're just going to read in a second, before God actually outlines any of the Ten Commandments, right, this is what he says first: "I'm the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery." He says, "I'm about to give you all of these instructions," but he hasn't actually given one single command yet. And yet they are asked, his people are asked, we are asked to remember what it is that he's already done for them. And this is really significant because this one sentence from God is the one sentence really for us that should dispel any notion that God is legalistic and that God is rigid and that God is strict and that God only does good things for us when we are on our best behavior. Because what this illustrates here is this: that God's grace always precedes God's law. Before he ever imparted to his people one single rule, one single regulation, one single suggestion to abide by, before any of that, his heart was first bent toward compassion, toward mercy, towards grace, and towards salvation for his people. This is what he's reminding them of. "I'm about to give you these Ten Commandments, but first remember what I have done for you." His heart was first bent towards compassion, mercy, grace, and salvation for his people. His great rescue mission, which was delivering the people from slavery in Egypt, it was not a result of their good behavior. Right? It wasn't because they had filled up a jar with enough marbles while in slavery they reached the top, and so they finally won the grand prize, right? He rescued them from slavery because they were his people, and he was a good and gracious and merciful and compassionate God who cared deeply for his people. Okay, so mid-current, before we even crack open, before we even take a look, before we even, just even begin to think about any of the laws that God really passed down to us, let us not be mistaken when considering God's law, that God's grace came first. And it always does. It did for them, and it does for me, and it does for you too. Grace isn't the result of good behavior, but it is the result of a very, very, very good God. But here is the reality, right? Just because grace came first, it doesn't mean that the law didn't ever come at all then. It did. And so in the verses to follow, God begins to outline the Ten Commandments. All right. And to most people, I think, to most people, both inside the church and outside the church, we have only some sort of, you know, kind of vague awareness, of the Ten Commandments. And most of us assume they're just, you know, this kind of set of, you know, disconnected, kind of isolated, arbitrary set of rules and set of laws. And this is what leads many people to think, man, God is just kind of like a big stick in the mud, isn't he? Right? I mean, this must be why mom doesn't allow potty jokes at the table, because they are in cahoots together, right? They just don't want us to have any fun at all. But what most people miss that I want to point out today is that God did not create this list kind of randomly or arbitrarily. Okay? God was not sitting on his heavenly throne, stroking his long white beard, thinking out loud to himself, I wonder what things that I should tell people that they can and cannot do. Right? He was not out to ruin the fun or to ruin anyone's life. In fact, yet again, it was quite the opposite. These laws, as I told you, we refer to them, these laws and these rules and regulations were designed to do something very specific for the people at this specific time. They were designed to provide and to preserve life that the people were now experiencing. They were given in direct response to the situation that those people now found themselves in, which was freedom. These laws were given in direct response to the new situation they found themselves in, which was freedom. Freedom that for generations they had not tasted for themselves because they were in slavery in Egypt. So put yourself in their shoes. Never once had a choice on where to go or what to do. Right? Never allowed to think for yourself. You're told always, every day, you know, when to sleep, when to eat, when to work, how long to work. And then all of a sudden, that's over. And you're free, okay? You're free, which is great, but now all of a sudden you're away from the only home and the way of life you've ever known, even if it wasn't that great of a home and even if it wasn't that great of a way of life. You are now away from the only life experience that you really ever had. And so in response to their new freedom, what did God do? God outlined some rules and some regulations and some boundaries to protect the freedom that they were now experiencing for the very first time. And so the commandments provided a way. That they provided a way for newly liberated slaves to maintain order and to continue to experience the benefits of the freedom that they were now experiencing. For instance, just a couple examples here. For instance, in verse 8, God gives the command that you may be familiar with. God gives the command to honor the Sabbath. Honor the Sabbath day, keep it holy. Okay? One day a week, we know, right? God says, just rest. Don't work. Honor the Sabbath. And we see it as old-fashioned. Like, ooh, man, that is just such an old way of thinking. Like, we're going like, wow, are people who really love God just supposed to sit home all day, you know, and do nothing strenuous just to prove how much that we love God? Wow, that seems strange, doesn't it? That seems weird. And so we think, man, God must be old-fashioned. But that's actually not what this command is really all about. It's a great thing to consider. It's a great practice to build into our lives. But Sabbath rest, it was actually very specific, a command given very specifically to that time and to those people. Sabbath rest gave a break to all of the people working their tails off to create life and to create community and to create a society for their people that they did not have yet. Again, these people were slaves, and now they were free, living in a land that, you know, in a way of life and in a community that had not yet been established. And so many of the people, a part of God's people known as the nation of Israel, many of these people were working hard to create and to establish it all, the community, the society, the way of life. And so God wanted, number one, God, he just wanted them to have a moment to rest. And number two, he wanted to help them see that while resting and with God on their side, they could still survive even if they took a day off. So honor the Sabbath, right? God says, hey, get some rest. I've got you. I've got this taken care of for you. In verse 12, we'll keep looking at a few examples here. In verse 12, God gives the command, honor your mother and father. Okay? And we think that this rule means that, you know, when moms and dads ask their kids to clean their rooms, kids are supposed to just do as they're told without talking back and without giving their parents any kind of attitude. Because God said, honor your mother and father. And I'm all for that, you know, for one, just so we're clear on that. But in reality, that's not exactly what this was all about. You see, in slavery, the Egyptians, right, that they're captors, the Egyptians actually intentionally broke down extended family units. Okay, while they were prisoners in Egypt, their captors, the Egyptians, they intentionally tried to break down and tear down and destroy the extended family units. And so now in their new life as free people, God wanted to preserve and he wanted to rebuild the integrity of the extended family so that aging parents weren't all of a sudden left out on their own with no one looking out for them, because while in slavery, family units just kind of fell apart. And so God says, hey, honor your mother and father. Bring them back into the fold as you now step into your new life of freedom. Okay, what about the commands to not steal, to not murder, to not speak falsely against your neighbor? These are a lot less confusing at face value. We're going like, well, those sound like good ones, right? But even those were given in direct relationship to the newfound freedom that God's people had, because these commands were given specifically to reduce the possibilities of economic exploitation in a community that was rapidly establishing its own economy for the very first time. And so God outlines these things to protect people against exploitation of people trying to build a life for themselves. The purpose of these commands and all the rest, it was to restrict the forces. It was to restrict the natural tendencies that would eat away at, that would destroy healthy freedoms and flourishing human society. And so what we need to learn from this is that God's law, as I've said, God's law preserved his people's freedom. Okay, God was, you know, he's not some, you know, rigid God, right? He didn't give these kind of laws because he was just rigid or legalistic or because he was just out to spoil all the fun. It was for the betterment and it was for the benefit and it was for the freedom of his people that they were now experiencing, that he wanted to preserve for them as best as he could. The truth is, though, it would be all too easy for them to forget that. It would be all too easy for them to forget or to be confused by all this stuff, which is why each new generation, you and me included in that, it's why each new generation needed to be reminded of all this. In fact, years later, look at what Moses, he was kind of the leader of the people. Look at what Moses says to the next generation. It's recorded in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. Here's what it says. In the future, your children will ask you, what is the meaning of these laws, decrees, and regulations that the Lord our God has commanded us to obey? Right? That's what so many of us are asking today. What's with all these rules? So Moses is saying, yeah, there's going to come a day when your children are going to be asking the same thing. What's with all of this stuff? Here's verse 21. Then you must tell them. He said, hey, remind them, tell them the story that we were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt. But the Lord brought us out of Egypt with his strong hand. And the Lord did miraculous signs and wonders before our eyes, dealing terrible blows against the Egyptians and Pharaoh and all his people. And he brought us out of Egypt so that he could give us the land that he swore to give to our ancestors. And then here's what he says in verse 24. And the Lord our God commanded us to obey all of these decrees and to fear him and to honor him. Why? So that he can continue to bless us and preserve our lives as he has done to this day. Right? That the point is simple. Right? Moses saying, hey, make sure your kids and their kids and their kids and their kids, all the way down to all of those folks sitting at Mid-Current Church in Hudson, Wisconsin in 2021, know. Make sure they know, number one, that God's grace precedes his law, that his love for his people existed before his expectations did. And number two, he's saying, make sure that they know that God's law preserved his people's freedom. Okay, he's saying, make sure you remind your kids that we obey these laws and these decrees and these regulations, not to pass some kind of, test, but to preserve our lives and to preserve our freedom that God has given us so freely and so graciously, right? God's people were once slaves, and then they were no longer slaves anymore. And the law, as it is referred to collectively, it was the owner's manual, tucked in the glove compartment, okay? It was the owner's manual to the life and to the freedom that they were now experiencing and to the fulfillment and to the real flourishing that God intended for them. It was never intended to ruin anyone's life. It was never intended to cramp anyone's style. It was intended to give God's people life to the full. And so that might fill in some blanks for you about the purpose of the law way back then. Okay, that makes sense, right? That might help you, fill in a couple of the blanks about why it existed way back then. But what about now? What about now? What about for us here today? Okay, you might be thinking, hey, very interesting stuff, Sten. That's, it's very helpful. But what about us? We were not prisoners in some, foreign land, now given freedom for the first time, trying to figure out what to do. So what about us? Okay, in one sense, yes, that's correct. We were not prisoners once in some foreign land under some foreign king and queen. But in another sense, I would argue that we actually are still prisoners. But to what is the question? Okay, well, fast forward many generations past, even the time that Jesus walked this earth, right after that, and there's a man named Paul, one of the earliest leaders in this new Jesus movement. He suggests what it is that we are still prisoners to. When he answers the question about the purpose of the law today, here's the third chapter of his letter to all of the Christians in Galatia. He says this, but the scriptures declare that we are all prisoners of sin. Okay, no, we may not be held captive by Pharaoh or by some other foreign king and queen, but we are held captive. We are enslaved by our own tendencies to pursue desires that are not of God, that are not from God, or that are not in our best interest, right? Oftentimes we are prisoners of our own jealousy or of our own greed or of our own lust or pride and so on. Those things will and oftentimes do control us. They will dictate what it is that we do next and how exactly it is that we do it. So we are not as free as we'd like to think we are. And so that there is still a need for us, that there is something that we need still to preserve our freedom. But the truth is, once Jesus came to this earth and once Jesus died on the cross and then defeated death and rose again, it was not that law. It was not those rules. It was not those regulations that preserved that freedom for us any longer. It was once before. The law that preserved the freedom and the way of life. It was once before, but it is no longer. And so verse 22 goes on to say, so we receive God's promise of freedom only by believing in Jesus Christ. Verse 23, he says, before the way of faith in Christ was available to us, yes, it was the law. He says we were placed under guard by the law. We were kept in protective custody, so to speak, until the way of faith was revealed. Verse 24, he tries to be very clear. He tries to summarize it all for them, and he says, let me put it another way. The law was our guardian until Christ came, and it protected us until we could be made right with God through faith. Friends, the purpose of the law today, the purpose of the law today is ultimately, hear me clearly here, it's ultimately to reveal to us that the law can really do nothing for us in the end. I'm not saying that we disregard the law. Oh, great, throw it out. Okay, but we have to realize that we can't keep the law. We can't follow all the rules well enough to make ourselves right in God's eyes. And so at a certain point, the law has only one purpose, and it points us to the reality that we need something more. We need something more than just, you know, following the rules or checking boxes or racking up a bunch of spiritual brownie points. We need something more than that. And so the law, it still has a purpose. We just need to understand its purpose. The law keeps us pointed in the right direction until we realize that only grace through faith in Jesus can provide the freedom that we are after, can provide the victory for us in the end. And so I want you to know that, yes, God's grace always precedes God's law, right? God is a love first, not an expectation first kind of God. But what happens in the end, Paul is saying, is that God's law points ultimately to God's grace. Okay, yes, God's grace precedes God's law, but in the end, God's law points right back to God's grace and to our need for it. That's its purpose in our lives today. When I was growing up just outside of Chicago, I had older cousins who ran cross country. And once a year, we would go to their meet that they ran not far from where it is that I lived. And to this day, I kid you not, to this day, I remember my fascination with the finish line. And in particular, I remember my fascination with what they call the chute in particular. Okay, all throughout the race, there were ropes that lined the left side of the course way over here and that lined the right side of the course way over here. And the runners, obviously, they ran in between them. But as you get nearer to the finish line, those ropes, little by little, start to narrow. And eventually, at the very end, they funnel down into the chute, which is ultimately wide enough for only one runner to enter into at a time as they cross the finish line and as they cross the race that they were running. Now, I don't necessarily think that they ran cross country in Galatia in the first century. And so I'm not really sure that this is the image that Paul had in mind. But somehow for me, it paints a picture of what Paul is talking about when it comes to the law and its role in our lives today. Okay, yes, there are our boundaries. And yes, there are guidelines out there for us on the course that is our life, and they're good. They are there to guide us. They are there to act as guardrails for us. They are there to keep us in the race, to keep us on track, to keep us running, and to keep us pointed in the right direction. But ultimately, the only purpose they serve, the only real power that they have, is to funnel down and to point to the only way that we really can cross the finish line and claim victory in the end. And that way is Jesus. We are not saved by keeping the law, but by grace through faith in Jesus. And so God's law, it leads the way until ultimately it gives way to Jesus. And so here's the deal, folks. If we have not yet surrendered to the way of Jesus, that's the next step in the race that we are running. Otherwise, we'll just keep running to the point of exhaustion Okay? If there is some area of our lives that we have relied on rule following rather than Jesus following, then that really is the next step for us to take, because the law can only lead the way for us until it ultimately gives way to the way of Jesus, right? The way of Jesus in our lives, the way of Jesus in our marriage, the way of Jesus in our parenting, the way of Jesus in our finances, in our sexuality, in our relationships, in our careers, and in our vocation. The law can only lead the way, can only point us in the right direction until the day we realize it really can't do for us in the end what we wish it could have done all along. And the truth is, I won't lie, the way of Jesus isn't always the easy way, but we still pursue it anyway, every day. Not to appease a God who is strict and legalistic and or prude or out to spoil all the fun. We still pursue it anyway for the sake of the life and the freedom that God ultimately intended for us. And so we can run the race confidently with assurance that God's grace for us exists no matter where we are out on the course. And we can run that race optimistically that God's grace is waiting for us when we reach the end of the ropes. And so my prayer is that one day, maybe that day is today, but my prayer is that one day each of us would come to believe and come to understand that that's really all that matters. Coming to Jesus when we've come to the end of the ropes. Let me pray for us. God, sometimes this stuff can be confusing. Sometimes all the things that are written, the laws, the rules, there's so many of them. God, sometimes it can, you know, just make us feel like, what in the world is going on? And who really are you, God? And are you really that good? Or are you just out to ruin all the fun, God? And so today I'm praying that you would help us to see clearly why it is these laws and these rules and these regulations exist for us. God, I pray that we would run the race diligently, mindful of those rules and those laws that kind of keep us pointed in the right direction, God. But ultimately, would you help us to know that it is not rule following that makes us right or good or pleasing in your eyes or in your sight, God. And so, God, I'm praying that each of us here, no matter where we are on this journey, no matter if we've, just taken the first step in following Jesus, or maybe we're 2, 3, 4, 5 steps down the line, God, I don't know, wherever we are on this journey, I'm just praying that we would come to an understanding of what it is ultimately that we need in the very end. And that's to surrender to your way for us. God, your way for our lives. And so, God, would you remind us of your grace? That's what we need to know more than anything, God, as we run this race that is our life, as we take wrong turns or get bumped off course or maybe spend some time running in the wrong direction. God, would you be there constantly reminding us of your grace for us at each and every step of the way? God, would you remind us that your grace did and always does exist for us first? And God, would you just help us to run our race pursuing you each step of the way so that we might not run to exhaustion, God, but that we might run into your arms that are outstretched wide for us. God, we give you thanks for this day. We give you thanks for the freedom that you have offered to us and for your grace that makes it all possible. And we pray these things in your name.